WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. The charge against the man accused of killing Heather Heyer has been upgraded to first-degree murder. As members of Congress debate mandating sexual harassment training for themselves, some experts question the effectiveness of such training. And in part two of our report on conditions at a detention facility near Stanton, we look at how unaccompanied immigrant children there are coping. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, December 15th. The Ohio man accused of ramming a car into a crowd of people protesting a white supremacist rally this summer in Charlottesville has had his most serious charge upgraded to first-degree murder. 20-year-old James Alex Fields appeared in court Thursday for a preliminary hearing. Prosecutors said they filed a motion earlier in the day to amend the second-degree murder charge he previously faced. The judge certified the murder charge and all others against Fields. His case will now be presented to a grand jury for an indictment. The judge also certified charges against three other defendants in cases related to the August rally. Fields' attorney did not present evidence or make any arguments at the hearing, although she did cross-examine a prosecution witness. Fields sat quietly in a striped jumpsuit with his hands cuffed. Authorities say Fields barreled into the crowd August 12th after attendees of a white supremacist rally had been forced to disband. One of the responses to the wave of sexual harassment allegations has been to increase mandatory workplace training, even among members of Congress. But as Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports, there's disagreement about how much impact such training may have.
The House Administration Committee is not usually known for moments of high drama, but that's exactly what happened during a recent meeting when Republican Congresswoman Barbara Comstock recounted a story she had heard about an unnamed colleague. The male congressman asked a female staffer to bring over some materials to his residence.
The young staffer, it was a young woman, went there and was greeted with a member in a towel. It was a male, who then invited her in. At that point, he decided to expose himself. She left, and then she quit her job.
A few days later, Comstock introduced a resolution requiring all members of Congress and their staffers to complete mandatory sexual harassment training during each session of Congress. The resolution sailed through the House as a wave of allegations continued to add new names every day. Susan Bissom Rapp at Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego says no empirical data exists to show that training works.
We know that mandatory training doesn't seem to work, or at least there's no evidence it does. And yet people keep deferring to that as a cure-all for the problem that ails us.
Comstock says one potential reason why no evidence exists to show training works is that the training itself is too generic. She says one way to handle that on Capitol Hill might be to create specialized training for congressional staffers, many of whom are in their first job out of college and might not realize when their bosses are behaving inappropriately. I'm Michael Pope.
Researchers at Virginia Commonwealth University and Lund University in Sweden say transmission of risk factors for major depression is equal parts genetic and child rearing. From partner station WCVE, Charles Fishburne reports.
Holidays bring depression for some, but it is a year-round problem for many others. And VCU professor of psychiatry Dr. Kenneth Kendler says genetics count, but so does child rearing.
We know that many people are depressed year-round. Another fact that we've known for a long time about depression is that it tends to run in families. The major focus of this study is trying to understand why parents with depression tend to have children who also suffer from the same condition.
He says the surprising finding is that transmission of depression from adoptive parents is just as strong as it is for biological parents. And it contradicts earlier studies that put more emphasis on genetics.
That means that parents who are unrelated genetically to their children, when they have depression, do in some ways through the way they rear their children, the kind of psychological atmosphere in the home, also predispose their children to having depression from psychological means. In addition to that, we know that the biological parents are transmitting genes to their children.
He says it's important because we can't intervene in genetics, but we can learn to minimize the risk of parents transmitting depression to their children. I'm Charles Fishburne,
WMRA News.
Governor-elect Ralph Northam has appointed Virginia's next Secretary of Natural Resources and the next Secretary of Agriculture and Forestry. Northam announced Thursday that Matt Strickler will be his Secretary of Natural Resources and Bettina Ring will be the next Secretary of Agriculture and Forestry. Strickler serves as senior policy advisor to the U.S. House Committee on Natural Resources. His portfolio includes fisheries, oceans, wildlife, and coastal policy, as well as related energy and public lands issues. Bettina Ring was appointed state forester by Governor Terry McAuliffe in 2014. Before that, she served as senior vice president of family forests at the American Forest Foundation, where she was responsible for overseeing the American tree farm system. Finally, around 30 unaccompanied immigrant children are being held at a juvenile detention center near Stanton. In part two of our report, WMRA's Jesse Nadler takes a look at how these undocumented youth cope with confinement and trauma.
Once a week, Washington and Lee poetry professor Seth Michelson travels to the Shenandoah Valley Juvenile Center just outside of Stanton.
How can I help you?
Seth Michelson here for poetry.
All right, go on in.
Thank you.
He teaches poetry to unaccompanied alien children detained there.
Buen día, chico. ¿Cómo estamos?
Bien, bien, bien. Buen día.
The minors range in age from 13 to 17 and hail mostly from Central America. They're locked up for crossing the United States border illegally, seeking to escape violence back home. Shenandoah Valley Detention is one of two maximum security juvenile facilities in the country. The kids are locked up there because of the danger they purportedly pose to themselves or others. Their migration stories are often horrifying. Violence, abandonment, sexual enslavement. Michelson uses poetry to help the kids work through past trauma. Reporters aren't allowed into the facility, so these recordings were made by Michelson.
I forget. Without reason to exist, I often forget that I am real, and this makes the soul I don't have ache, as if I'm walking somewhere, unable to find myself.
Some of the kids were conscripted into gangs and drug cartels before fleeing for the United States. A mural at the center features paintings by the children.
One child's work with the cartel was to dissolve dismembered body parts in vats of acid. That's what he painted as representational of his past. I mean, this is a child who's been through severe trauma.
But the immigrant children at this facility are not receiving adequate care and attention. This, according to a class action lawsuit filed in October by a teenage detainee from Mexico. It alleges beatings and psychological abuse by guards. Children are locked in their rooms for 12 to 14 hours a day. Nutrition is substandard. Meals are often served cold. Some of the kids don't even know why they're there.
Marriage. Yesterday in my cell, my pal asked, "Man, don't you want to marry life forever?" And I answered, "Why marry life if I can't divorce death?"
The brutal conditions of their confinement may end up re-traumatizing the children, according to the lawsuit. Michelson uses the weekly workshops to try to inject a little beauty and hope into their lives.
Poetry gives them a language to think about what they've been through, why they came here, what they hope to achieve and become, how they've suffered, how do you cope with a lonely night?
The workshops serve as a form of therapy.
Somebody reads something beautiful and everybody bursts into applause, and it's really special in that way.
The alternative coping method that is so prevalent among this population is disturbing and deadly. Aaron Ferber is a former student of Michelson's who has attended some of the workshops.
One week, I asked one of the kids, like, "Oh, where are your glasses at?" And he's like, "Oh, they were taken away from me because I was hurting myself with them." It's heartbreaking. I don't think there's another word to describe that.
Self-harm and suicide attempts are widespread. The lawsuit alleges indifference by guards. Michelson says he worked with one child who attempted suicide 6 times. I asked if he ever worries about giving these children false hope.
If it's false hope to keep them from committing suicide, then I'm glad that it's a functional false hope at least. Every one of these kids in different conditions would thrive. They'd do great in the local high schools. They'd be on the local soccer teams and the local dance teams. They would be dating and working.
A collection of their poetry has been published in a new book called Dreaming America. Most of the kids have never before owned a book.
So their first book that they possess is a book that they helped to write.
He hopes it gives them a will to live despite a very uncertain future. Proceeds from sales go to a legal defense fund on their behalf.
Thank you very much.
For WMRA News, I'm Jesse Nadler.
If you missed part one of Jesse's report, you'll find that and much more information at WMRA.org. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your Friday.